fasten your seatbelts, get the tissues ready, and polish up those dancing shoes. We're going down musical memory lane with me, Monique Chambers, and a bunch of guests that have got really eclectic taste. Welcome to this week's Musical Memories with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is the soprano, Gillian Zanit. Now, I hope you're going to sing for us at a point. I hadn't warmed you up.
Song, no.
No, but your list came through, okay. And, you know, unsurprisingly, some classical music.
Yes.
But thank goodness, finally, somebody's got Elvis Presley on their list, so thank you for that. But yeah, quite an interesting list.
Yes, quite varied.
But how do you, what's your first memories of music, and how do you know you're a soprano? How does one know that?
Well, my first memories of music were basically my sister is 8 years older than me, and she used to play the piano. And my first memories of her were of music were her practicing and me thinking that was just something I would like to do, and mm-hmm. I started piano lessons. And as soon as I got involved with music, I started playing the piano when I was 5. I just knew that music was the thing that I wanted to do.
Okay.
And I started studying piano first. That was my first instrument and my first love. And the idea there was to study, go abroad, study at college, and become a pianist. And singing didn't feature into the picture until at least I was about 13.
Okay.
And my mum used to sing at St. Patrick's Choir. She was English. She used to sing at the choir there, and I used to sing with her sometimes. And the choir master said, "Oh, you know, you've got a pretty voice. Why don't you go for lessons?" And I thought, "Oh, that sounds easy enough." And to go to college, you needed a second instrument as well. So when you were studying at college, you did your primary instrument and your second. And I thought, okay, singing can be my second instrument. And it just took over.
Okay.
So it literally just, I felt when I sang, I could express myself much more than when I played the piano.
So when you go to lessons, and is that when people sort of realise that they can do those octaves and they can
yes,
do that?
So that's when you start. You obviously have to have the natural ability, so mm-hmm. the natural range is there. And at 13 is quite young. Obviously, the voice hasn't settled or hasn't developed at all. So how it's going to be, you know, later in life. Thankfully, as a singer, you're in your prime when you're in your 40s and 50s.
Oh,
so that's great. Exactly. So you have quite a while to, you know, decide what you're... yeah, that's how you start. You start off learning repertoire that's suitable for your age and mm-hmm. your voice at the time, and then it just grows, and yeah, you have a good teacher who, you know, just understand where the voice lies most comfortably and guides
and stretches you from
yeah,
there.
Exactly.
So your first song on your list is Caro Nome from Rigoletto.
Yes.
What memory does that bring to you?
Well, Caro Nome is from Rigoletto, as you mentioned, and Rigoletto was the first major role that I played. So that was at the Manwa Theatre. I can't remember the year, actually. It's quite a while ago. But it was my first big role.
Mm-hmm.
It was a role I had always loved, and I'm not really a Verdi soprano, so I can't really sing any of the other Verdi roles. And this is the only Verdi role that suits my voice. And when the theatre offered me the role, I was just it was just fantastic. It was a real dream come true. And like I said, it was the first big role, so it was quite a milestone as well in my career to be able to
kick off with that.
Exactly,
yeah.
To sing that.
Let's have a bit of a listen to that. That's Caro Nome from Rigoletto by Verdi.
Oh! So you studied abroad then with your piano singing?
With my voice. My voice took over. And then I went to Italy to study, yes.
Okay.
The plans changed. So I, when I was about 18, I auditioned for an Italian tutor, an Italian singer called Carlo Bergonzi. He was one of the greats, old school greats, in the times of Callas and Sutherland. Uh-huh. He was one of the big tenors of the time, and he had a small academy in Italy. I auditioned for him, and he took me on. He only took on 10 students a year.
Wow.
So it was a very small, uh-huh, very intense, you got real, you know, one-to-one training, which was great. And I stayed with him for 3 years. And then after that, I did a year with Victoria de Los Angeles, who was another Spanish diva, you mm-hmm know, living legend. They were both real, you know. And I learned, obviously, vocal technique from them, but also just the way of life. They really prepared you for what was going to come. You know?
So waking up and which dress to choose to wear for which show.
Important things,
oh,
exactly.
Sorry, I know I'm shallow. I'm,
yes,
I'm,
no.
But you see the frocks and it's like, yeah, just wish I had the voice to be able to have that many frocks.
Exactly. You know? Yes. Yeah, and the way of life, you know, because there is a lot of sacrifice. There's a lot of things you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
As a singer, you know, you have to give up going out and friends. I mean, I don't know how. There's a T-shirt that people in our profession, you know, wear as a joke, and it says, "Sorry, can't rehearsing." And there's just so many things that you can't do. You can't drink, you can't go out, you can't go to a bar in case music's too loud and you might project your voice too much, you wake up wow tired the next day. Certain foods you can't eat. And so Bergonzi in particular, his school was in a very small village called Busseto in the north of Italy. The average age of the population of the village must have been 70, and there was nothing in this village.
So no temptations.
There was a bar mm-hmm where all the 70-year-old men used to go, so it wasn't enticing
just getting
at all
you ready for most of your audience,
yes,
though, unfortunately.
Exactly. A coffee shop, no cinema, nothing. So it was you wake up, have breakfast, sing, lunch, sing, supper, sing.
Wow.
Same routine the next day. Obviously, I was 20, 21. And I had this 21-year-old Spanish roommate, so occasionally we'd escape to the next village without a disco, and we'd always get into terrible trouble. But that was
it was worth it, way you get to today. So the next song on your list is Strauss. Now, did you learn multiple languages, or you learn the song in the language that it's...
Well, you start off learning the song that the language is in, and mm-hmm you learn it phonetically, but then, of course, it depends how deeply you want to go into the text and how well you want to really express uh-huh and portray. So there are those people who just do it phonetically and have a gist of what the piece is about, but I really like to go into it in much more depth to really mm-hmm understand. I mean, at the moment I'm working on a Russian program and I am having Russian
wow
lessons. I've started learning Russian, which is actually a language I've always wanted to learn because I find it a very interesting language. Yeah, you need to
know a bit about everything.
You need to do.
And to be able to, say, to project the emotion
the
of the
text,
song.
Of course.
You can't not know what it really means.
Exactly. I mean, with Italian, of course, we're lucky because we speak Italian, so it's easier, French as well. But then the other languages, you just need to, you know, really do your homework. And it's things like, especially the Strauss as well, that's Lieder. And I'm not saying that in opera it's not the case, but in Lieder especially, the text is so married to the music. It is a duet between the text and the music. It's not beautiful music and the text is secondary,
mm-hmm,
which can happen in opera sometimes. These songs are just written on some of the most famous and beautiful poems of their time. So the composers would write the music. So if you don't know what that particular word means, there's no way you can put the right color into your voice because you don't know what that word means. So you can have a gist of the idea. Literal translation is an you must, you know, you have to know what every word means to get the right colour.
So we're going to have a little bit of a listen to some Strauss now. We listen to Beim Schlafen gern.
Yes.
You go, I can do it.
Thank you.
Now, the next one is Mozart. What memory does that bring back for you?
So, Mozart is definitely one of my favourite composers. But this aria in particular, Ruhe Sanft, is the first time I heard it was when I went to watch the film Amadeus.
Okay.
And that was just such an amazing film. Just, I think it didn't introduce me to Mozart, obviously, because I knew, but it introduced you to the composer, to the person, as opposed to just the music. And I think that it did that to a generation of people, not just musicians, but people who might necessarily not have been exposed to Mozart. And it did in such an amazing way. And so this Ruhe Sanft, the first time I heard this aria, because it's not an opera, Zaida is not an opera that's performed regularly, but the aria is extremely beautiful. And it's just... It's also, funnily, it was my husband and mine favourite film as well. And
oh,
our first
okay.
date, we kind of sort of really gelled. So he said, what's your favourite film? I was like, Amadeus. Oh, and then we sort of just started, it took off from there. So.
Oh, so do you still watch it regularly or
yes,
is it something else?
Yes, I've watched the outtakes, the director's cuts.
Oh, you are a fan.
Definitely.
So we're going to play a bit of Ruhe Sanft by Mozart. This is, Gillian not in her ball gown. So, this is the Son of a Preacher Man, which is one of those that you just want to start singing anyway. You can't leave that in your head. That has to come out. Pulp Fiction?
Again, Amadeus and Pulp Fiction, my two favourite films. Okay. I know totally nothing to do with each other, but I just love that film.
Mm-hmm.
I love these kind of slightly dark humour and just it's a great, and the soundtrack is amazing.
Yes,
it's just, you know, you could have chosen any, I could have chosen any song from that soundtrack, but that one in particular,
this is one
favorite.
That people are winding their windows down and going to be
exactly.
joining in
singing
in. There's not much to it, but the, you know, when she starts belting out the chorus,
it's a great song.
Yeah, it's a really good one. So here you go, windows down, Son of a Preacher Man.
Preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along. When they gathered round and started talking, Pastor Billy would take me walking. Out through the backyard we'd go walking. Then he'd look into my eyes. Lord knows to my surprise, the only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. Yes, he was, he was. Yes, he was. Being good isn't always easy, no matter how hard I try. When he started sweet talking to me, he come and tell me everything is alright. He kiss and tell me everything's alright. Can I get away again tonight? The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. Yes, he was. He was. Lord, he was.
Yes, he was.
And another one, this one is, okay, Janis Joplin, I've never quite understood it. I've never got it.
I think I was so attracted to her singing because it's so opposite to what I do. It's just, I would listen to her and I just think, how on earth does she sing like that? And it's just, it's again, it's not about singing, it's about such a, I find, a raw release of emotion.
That's true. It's definitely expression.
It's just expression. Yeah, yeah. It's just about, it's using your voice for expressive purposes. Oh. And again, coming back to it, of course, in a very different way, in a much more refined and much more, a less free way, but this is what singing as well, I find, does. That you are your instrument.
Mm.
So the emotion as well, I mean, it happens, of course, with any instrumentalist, whatever instrument they're playing, depends on the mood you're in that day. But I find with singing, because you are creating that sound, your own sound, when you able to express, it's just a release of emotion. It's just, you know, and when you feel that, you know the audience has felt it.
Yes.
And for me, the most important thing is when people leave the theatre is not to say, oh, wow, it's a lovely voice. Mm. It's to say, oh, that piece, isn't that piece amazing? It has to always come back to the music.
Music, okay.
And I think if you're expressing, then that is your job.
Ah. And do you think that, like you said about people's mood and whatever, but do characters gravitate towards particular types of music, or is it...
Yes, I would say so. Mm. I mean, my music of choice, if I could only ever sing one type of music ever again, it would definitely be lead. So okay. It would be a more intimate, it wouldn't be a big grand opera. Mm. It would be voice and piano,
uh-huh.
Or maybe a small string ensemble. It would be very intimate music, and just because that suits my...
Your character.
My character.
Well, this one, which is Janis Joplin's Me and Bobby McGee, you know.
Wind those windows down again.
The other side of Gillian Zammit. And I don't think we've played Janis Joplin on Campus FM before.
Okay.
But here we go.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew. Just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, I mean nothing, hon, if it ain't free. And feeling good was easy now, when he sang the blues. You know, feeling good was good enough for me. Good enough for me and my Bobby, yeah. From the Kentucky coal mine to the California sun, hey, Bobby shared the secrets of my soul. Through all kinds of weather, through everything we've done, your Bobby, baby, kept me from the lower. One day of near Selena's long, I let him slip away. He's looking for that home, and I hope he finds it. To be holding Bobby's body next to mine. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, that's all that Bobby left me. But feeling good was easy now when he sang the blues. Hey, feeling good was good enough for me. Mm-hmm. Good enough for me and my Bobby. La 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 la
Now, this is a beautiful song. This is Barcelona with Freddie Mercury and Montserrat Caballé. Now, they brought classical music, I think, one of those songs that bring it to the general public, especially, you know, football involved or whatever. And it just, people will go around, you almost can't say Barcelona without wanting to sing it at the top of your voice.
Yeah.
I don't really know the rest of it, but the Barcelona, you know, you want to do. So it, what does that remind you of?
Well, I'm a mega fan of Freddie Mercury. I mean, I love Queen too. I didn't include a Queen song. I was thinking of it, but then I wanted to include this simply because it was just that marriage of Freddie Mercury had the most amazing voice and technique and could sing anything. I mean, could have been a classical singer if he had wanted to. And then Montserrat, who was obviously another legend. I mean, I would listen to this record, because in those days it was records, in my living room, and I would just sing along to the whole album. Like, I was Montserrat. I wanted to be Montserrat. Oh. I was so jealous of
her.
But, you know, it was just a... It's a lovely record. I mean, all the songs are beautiful. But it's just, you know, two magical voices and two magical entertainers, people who walked on stage and you wouldn't be able to take your eyes off them.
Uh-huh. It must have been such at the time, I don't actually recall much more than, you know, the word, but it must have been such a shocker for Freddie Mercury to come out at the same time.
And so brave of him as well, I mean, because he is a, and wasn't the time when Pavarotti was doing his Pavarotti and Friends, that was many, many years later. So for a, you know, rock singer to go and sing with someone like Montserrat Caballé, it was just like, what are you doing? Sacrilege. It just worked so well.
It did. It did. So we're going to listen to, I'm not going to do it, Barcelona. Now we're back to normal.
Expected.
Back to normal. No, I was hoping when I spoke to a mutual friend of ours and they said to me, you've got to get Gillian, she's got a really wide taste. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah. So that was one of the reasons, because if it was all classical, it'd be prescribed, you know, we'd sort of know. So it's quite interesting. And Elvis is soon. But we've got some Handel in here. You said Mozart probably your favourite?
Yeah, one of my favourite.
Yeah.
Mozart, I think, Richard Strauss, I love the second piece we heard. I think those are my... I love Shostakovich. And then here we have Handel, and I sing a lot of Baroque music.
Okay.
So I'm, you know, I would say a large majority of the music I'm singing at the moment is Baroque music. And this particular piece from the Dixit Dominus is a bit of a special piece because... must be about, I think, maybe 10 years ago now, I had the chance to sing this piece, which is a duet with Emma Kirkby, Dame Emma Kirkby.
Okay.
So, again, another living legend of the Baroque world. And so it was a very special moment. I've sung with her twice, but that was the first time. And she was just so lovely, just so, such a generous person.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just another great moment.
So do you not find, because I remember seeing there's in the Malta Philharmonic Orchestra, there's the lady who's the first violinist.
Marcelina.
Oh, and she's just so regular.
Yes.
But, you know, she walks around knowing she has that talent.
You know, I think it's people, it's the truly talented people who are so normal and down to earth about it because, and they want to as well pass on what they know and their knowledge to the next generation, which is what it's all about as well, you know. It's not just about you being the performer and the great performer that these people are, but you know, it's doing it because there's such a love and want to share it with as many people as possible.
Because you teach now, in fact.
I teach, yes.
From any age?
I focus mainly on older students and the advanced ones, preparing them for auditions abroad. In fact, a number of my students have been abroad and now are pursuing their own careers, which is lovely to see. It's really, really nice. And it's something I really enjoy.
And is it something you treat purely the singing, or do you go into the fact of the, you know, the history of the music, the...
Yes, I do a lot of that. When I see that somebody's particularly talented and I really think they should go abroad, you know, to study and pursue, then I make sure that they attend separate lessons for that, so they get a really good background. So when they go abroad, they're really prepared for this. And this is something actually I'm doing with, I've started a new choir recently for St. John's Cathedral Foundation, a new children's choir. And this is how I'm working. So we have singing sessions, of course, which we work on vocal technique and everything, but they're also getting theory sessions, history of music, so they understand the different periods, what was going on at the same time.
Because it's not just about singing,
the social history,
well,
you know, everything else. So it's a holistic way of looking at training.
Because I think it's important that they know when they're up there that you're trying to get those people to imagine they're in that period at that time. You don't want
to. That's it. And why do we sing this piece in this style and not in this style, which came later? So, you know, rather than just a parrot, okay, learn this and sing it like this, and that's all it's about. So.
Yeah. No, and it must be really interesting when you can extract a talent and a, you know, a wider range, whatever, for somebody young. And
yes. No, it's a lovely, really lovely, very rewarding part of what I do.
So Malta's got a lot of talent?
A lot of talent.
So if your child's singing in the shower, we need to start paying attention.
Indeed.
Okay, we'll do that. But while people are doing that, we're going to listen to a bit of Handel. Elvis Presley. Hello. I didn't think it'd be you, I have to say. I've had some, you know, nice older gentlemen on my show who have got interesting music tastes. Not one of them
really
came up with Elvis Presley.
I just think he, A, had the most amazing voice.
Mm-hmm.
Was a very good singer. Was gorgeous.
I was going to say, wasn't ugly, you know.
And so. I just was quite obsessed by him. To admit, watched all the films. I loved the Las Vegas live shows. Uh-huh. Just as such a performer, an entertainer, there just fantastic. I mean, again, I chose this song. You could have chosen anything.
I'm glad you chose this one. There are a few that actually make me sob. So I'm glad it was this one, because there are a few that all just remind me of my mum dancing or whatever. And yeah, so this one's always on my mind, which is, it still gives me the shivers.
Yeah,
still gives me the shivers. So we're going to have a listen to the full version of Always On My Mind by Elvis Presley.
Maybe I didn't treat you quite as good as I should have. Maybe I didn't love you quite as often as I could have. Little things I should have said and done, I just never took the time. You were always on. Never told you I'm so happy that you're mine. If I made you feel second best, girl, I'm so sorry I was blind. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. Yeah. I just never took the time.
We're unfortunately probably not going to be able to hear the whole thing because it's Tchaikovsky's number one piano concerto, quite a long piece.
It'll take a while.
But we'll definitely get the beginning in. But do you play this?
Well, when I started playing the piano, and that was my dream to go abroad and study. The plan was that I would go to Royal College in London, and I would study there. And then when I graduated, I'd cross the road to the Royal Albert Hall and play Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto No. 1. Uh-huh. That was the dream. Didn't quite work out that way, but it's just such an amazing piece. I have the score at home, and I occasionally do play the opening bars, but that's about as far as I get these days.
Just because of time, really.
Because of time, yes, so. Exactly. So, yes, it's maybe one day later in life I'll go back to it and
continue
my way through it all the way.
So that's that memory of you wanting, that starting
was,
off
yes,
your dream.
Yes, that was the piece. It's just such an iconic, amazing piece, and, you know, it's whenever you hear those opening bars, it's just Tchaikovsky, it's just, yes.
Yeah, you just have to breathe in your ball gown.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, this is a lunchtime show, so we're...
Well, we're sitting here in our ball gowns.
Yeah. We so should have done that. So relax and enjoy as much as we can fit in of Tchaikovsky's No. 1 Piano Concerto. Now, the last one, I actually, you made me, like, not waste half an afternoon, but then I, you put
well
in
spent.
Visi d'Arte by Puccini, but it had to be Maria Callas singing. It was very, very insistent.
No other
So then, of course, I had to go and watch it, you know. And, yeah, I want that haircut. Definitely. I want the frock. So, why this one and why her particular interpretation?
Well, Callas was, and for me, the supreme performer. The voice, I mean, again, Callas had her critics who would say that her voice was not the most beautiful. In fact, at the time, it was a rivalry between her and then Renata Tebaldi, who had the more beautiful voice, granted. But what Callas had was, again, coming back to using voice as a form of expression. It's not about your voice, it is about the emotion that you can pass on through your voice, and that is what she does, in so many areas, but I find in this, I can watch this 100 times and I cry each time. Just the way she, and just, it comes from somewhere deep within her, and it's just a very real emotion. It's not it's not fake, it's not... She was the first singing actress as well. She was the first opera singer who didn't just stand there and sing her aria. She stood there, and she was a consummate performer, from acting, singing. And it's just, I mean, if you just listen to this, and just the way she breathes at the end, the last breath she takes is not a breath, it's a sob. And she's not singing, it's just, that's, again, you just listen to it and you know it's from a real place of real sadness. She had it wasn't a happy woman for all her talent and everything that she had, and this particular recording performance comes from 1964, when it was a very difficult place. Zeffirelli had managed to get her back on stage. She had, you know, met an assist, and she had given up singing for a while, and this was almost like her comeback. And it's just...
Yeah, it is stunning, but like I said, it's very emotional.
Very emotional.
And even if you have no clue.
That's it. Even if you don't know, you don't know where it's coming from, what it's about, what the opera's about, it gives you a feeling. And that is what music is about.
Yeah. I've got an awkward goosebump here again. Because I'm remembering seeing it, so you do have to watch it. We're going to let you listen, but you do have to watch it.
Yeah.
But that feeling when you're... Because I was watching it almost with nerves, that is she going to start? You know, because you're waiting and you think, oh, it must be so nerve-wracking, just sort of standing there, knowing everyone's just staring at you.
I think once you get... the worst part of performing for me is just before you go on, because it's just that, and waiting in the wings, it's just the worst. But once you step on stage, of course, if you're well-prepared and you've, you know, worked up to the performance, and then it is, you put yourself in a zone... Where you're not yourself. So when I'm on, when I'm stage, I'm not myself, because the last place I wouldn't, you know, even when I'm out socially, I'm not the most, you know, exuberant person. I'm more of an introvert. So when you're on stage, you do take on a different personality, but you take it on according to the music that you want to portray. So in that moment, yes, there will be things that you have in the back of your mind, technical issues about this and that and whatever, but when you let the music take you and you really, again, look at it as a form of expression, then those nerves don't come into it because you are...
Ready.
You are ready it's just part of you.
And you just know... This is when I start.
Yes.
No, I just find it incredible, because I'd be terrified to walk across the stage, let alone blah. But just to have that presence that you like you said, she doesn't care. Someone's just standing there staring, or lots of people are staring at her, and she's sort of standing there. That I find incredible. And then when you start to sing, like you said, letting it all go is quite something. So this is the Maria Callas version of Visi d'Arte by Puccini. Sob away.
Thank you.
Gillian, it's been really interesting talking to you today with your musical memories, with some classical and Elvis Presley. So I really, genuinely, I can't believe he's on your list, so I'm really happy about that. Yeah, we'll talk about the Janis Joplin and stuff like that another time. But thank you so much for joining me.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Musical Memories. We hope you've enjoyed visiting Musical Memories with me, Monique Chambers, and this week's guest. Tune in next week for more.